Hello and welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host. How are you all today? Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining. I hope everyone is well, especially after the season has finally come to an end. It's kind of come as a relief to me. That's probably my overwhelming feeling. I just think the season needed to end, especially after we got knocked out against PSG. I'm glad it's over. I'm glad it's done. A lot of players just need to put their feet up, rest, recuperate. Arteta himself, he needs a break. He needs to rest. And clearly the club's executives need to just get it done now. Right. So we'll cover a number of things in today's recording. So I think I'll start with, the Southampton result. Yes, that's right. There was a football match still to close out the Premier League season. Arsenal winning thanks to a fantastic Odegaard strike late in the match to win 2-1. I must admit this is one of the rare times I do this. I did not watch this one live. The kickoff time in Australia, like it makes it tough. I'm not going to lie, right? It makes it really, really tough, especially when there was nothing particularly on the line. Compared to this time 12 months ago, when Arsenal was still right up until the final day, was still right in the Premier League title, I don't care what the kickoff times were, 11 p.m., 1:30 a.m., 3 a.m., I was waking up, I was preparing, I was watching every minute. I couldn't not. This time, though, ever since PSG eliminated Arsenal and our season effectively was over, just waiting to sort of limp over the finish line, I haven't been watching every match live, and after sleep is at a premium. I've had a young one who's a bit unwell, so a number of factors at play there, and I just thought, you know what, I'll watch the full match in the morning, and I have been. So I still tuned into the match, of course. Interesting. Look, it's hard to read too much into the match, given the fate of both teams. Both teams were resigned to their fate effectively before the match. So it's hard to read too much into it, especially with such a disjointed lineup. You saw players start that match. Tierney as a left back, as a left centre back. Who was excellent, by the way. I'm so glad he got his moment. You saw him in his final appearance for the club. Sterling was given a start, which, you know, like he's obviously leaving the club as well. So it's hard to read too much else into it. What I will say is that it really does encapsulate Arsenal's Premier League season. Like Arsenal look good. This is the thing. Like don't be fooled. Don't be dragged into the mudslinging, especially after Tottenham won the Europa League and who's had a better season and second again, ole ole. Don't be dragged into that sort of stuff. Arsenal are good. Arsenal are damn good. Can we climb the mountain? Can we finish? Can we cap off this iteration of Arsenal with the major trophies? That's an understandable question mark. It is, especially from the outside. Right, when people just dismiss context, the context of injuries, refereeing decisions, Arsenal hamstringing ourselves with our inaction in the transfer market, weakening our squad last year by exiting four players. Context matters. So Arsenal, internally and externally, right, have kind of botched this season. We kind of have. And that's the cold hard truth that I'm sure is being discussed and debated at board level. I'm sure Arteta is letting them know his feelings on the matter. And I think that's what's really driving and fueling a lot of the energy and activity or the messaging we're hearing coming out from the club, coming out from Josh Kroenke and whatnot. So what I'm trying to say is that Arsenal are damn good. And we are so close. We've got to get these decisions right, though, right? We really do. This summer is massive. You certainly don't need me to tell you that, right? If you're listening to this, you're obviously an Arsenal lover just like I am, right? So you get it just as much as I do. We must make intentional, conscious, correct decisions this summer. In a host of positions. So I'll try and cover them broadly in this recording. But sorry to waft away from the Southampton match. I'll just cap off just to say it encapsulated Arsenal's season in that the scoreline doesn't reflect the dominance. We really had them on toast. And we concede a goal that we just shouldn't be conceding, right? These set-piece goals that we are conceding, it just shouldn't be happening. And if Gabriel and Saliba are there, look, ever since Gabriel became his hamstring injury, unfortunately, ever since that happened, right, we've had a pretty poor defensive record from set pieces. It must be said, very unusual. Like you don't associate that. You don't associate that kind of sloppiness with this current day Arsenal. I'm sorry if you can hear some banging noises in the background, just some construction happening outside the window. My apologies for that. But I was just saying that I don't think we concede those goals when with Gabriel marshalling the defence. Still, though, it matters, right? It doesn't matter who's on the pitch when you concede a goal. It's registered as a goal. It matters. And I think upon reflection, when we look back at the season, there'll be some glaring things that stand out immediately. And obviously, we've lost the title. I believe the end gap was 10 points, thanks to, you know, we won a couple of matches to close the season out. Liverpool, as understandable, of course, when you win the title, your last remaining matches don't have the same jeopardy, and it's largely a celebration, isn't it? So they've fallen away since, but when they won the title, I believe it was 14 points, 15 points. That was probably more so a more accurate reflection of the gap of the dominance. But end of the season, we're 10 points short. I believe last year we hit 89 points. The season before was 84 points. So our trajectory has been well pegged back. More pressing, though, for Arsenal is the goals column. So last year we hit 91 goals and we had a fantastic spread of goals from a number of forwards. Without stating the bleeding obvious, this year we've just been heavily crueled by injury, heavily. Like it's been unprecedented in my time following Arsenal. I mean, post Dubai, post January transfer window. I'll get to the transfer window in a moment, actually. But post that, then to lose Martinelli, 5-6 week hamstring injury. Kai Havertz out for the season. I still remember my disbelief when I read that tweet from Ornstein. It was the next morning, Australian time, by the time I read that. And I woke up, and I was unfathomable. I couldn't believe it. I thought, are you effing kidding me? This is on top of Jesus ACL the previous month. Saka a few weeks before that. Another hamstring surgery, right, out for four months on top of Odegaard already, who returned in November-ish after a couple of months out. I mean, it was just unprecedented. And just we couldn't get momentum. We couldn't get going. Jesus at the time that he unfortunately did his ACL against Manchester United in the FA Cup match. If you're a repeat listener to me, you've heard me bang on about that moment and the long-term ramifications of that match, that FA Cup loss. It's why I started the podcast in the aftermath of that and the abuse that Kai Havertz received, unfortunately. It's why I started the podcast. So that's going to live long in my memory for a long, long time. But the form Jesus was in, he was looking fantastic. He was looking back to his pre-World Cup best. His opening few months when he joined Arsenal, he was transformational. He lifted everything. He was a proven winner. He and Zinchenko lifted the levels of Arsenal. And our form prior to that World Cup, it was title worthy. It was title winning. Unfortunately, he hasn't been the same player since, and continually these recurring injuries have really stifled his Arsenal career. And yet he was looking great. He was looking fantastic. And then he goes down. And it's not like we just cop a little sprain or a knock. He's out for 7 to 10 days. It's almost the maximum possible time frame of injuries. We don't cop a 3 week hamstring strain, do we? Like a standard 21 day hamstring protocol. Our hamstrings are torn off the bone, requiring corrective surgeries and procedures to reattach it to the bone 4 months out, 5 months out. Gabriel, Saka, Havertz, even Martinelli's hamstring strain against Newcastle was a 5 to 6 weeker. It's just been unrelenting. Odegaard, an ankle sprain on international duty, it turns out to be ligaments. He's out for 3 months. Calafiori goes away to Italy and he slips or slides in unfortunate circumstances. Okay, he's out for 4 to 5 weeks. I mean, it's just like that. Whatever the maximum possible time frame is, yep, that's what you get, Arsenal. That's what you cop. And Jesus and an ACL injury like that. I mean, it's just it's mind blowing. It is absolutely mind blowing. And it's been really, really the story of the season. So what I'm saying with all of this, I don't want to put everyone through the same trauma again, the injury trauma, is that Arsenal have copped a horrendous amount of bad luck. I haven't even mentioned the refereeing stuff, the side of things, which I think just even for my own well-being right now, I just won't go too much into, because you know what I'm referring to. I know that you know what I'm referring to, right? So I don't need to spell it all out. Just one by one, we have copped an unlucky spate of circumstances. What I do want to hone in on, though, is that the controllables. Arsenal have botched our controllables. We have a number of things externally that have happened. Internally, though, there's some genuine hard questions to ask. And look, the reality is we won't really hear any answers, because it's not like we can just have Edu on the line and give his version of events and like, what really happened last summer? Are the rumors true that there was perhaps some friction in terms of where things were heading in terms of investing, strengthening the team? He didn't want Calafiori. Why did Mourinho take so long? How come it took so long to close the Calafiori deal, for example? And did Arteta have to like plead with the ownership and board level that this is his plan, this is why we're investing in another defender when there's you know, glaring gaps elsewhere in the squad? Why did we exit 4 attackers? Why? Some on loan, some through sales, which is fine in its own right, right? That's fine. But we were aware that come April last year, when we're trying to win against Bayern Munich in a Champions League knockout tie, whilst navigating 3 days later a match against Aston Villa in the Premier League at home to stay on top of the Premier League title, why is it that we have chosen to weaken our attack and not reinvest? How did we go from the early rumours pre-Euros last year linking us heavily with Benjamin Sesko to then have nothing, and Nico Williams to then have nothing on but deadline day Raheem Sterling? There are some genuine questions to ask. How are we pursuing Joan Garcia as a second goalkeeper? 30 million euros, seriously, by the way? Like, is that necessary to then end up with Edu pulling the plug and calling his compatriot Nito on deadline day? There's some really disjointed, unusual events that have happened at Arsenal, and they stand out for that very reason, that they have not been consistent with what we've seen in the previous few windows. We've seen an alignment between, at the time, Vinai, board level, Tim Lewis, Edu, Mikel, Josh Kroenke. You see them all working in unison. You can just feel it. You can feel it externally watching on. I'm all the way over in Australia, right, looking on from afar, possibly one of the longest distances from London, right? But I'm looking on a united, cohesive, collaborative, professional unit. Board, management, executives, they're all in alignment, all directly tapped into the ownership. I see it. It's palpable. This summer, I did not see it. I did not feel it. And that reflects. It reflects on the decisions or indecisions that we've made. And we're all been scratching our heads trying to figure out, like, what the hell just happened? How is that allowed to happen? And then January rolls around. In terms of unprecedented, I've never heard Arteta. I've never heard him talk so openly. I mean, he's having a press conference every 3 days, right? Because there's a match every 3 days. He's saying the same thing. They're asking him repeatedly. Transfers, this, Saka's out. Now Jesus is out. You've got 11 fixtures in January. You want to win the Premier League. You want to win the Champions League. You know, he was saying we need a forward. We need to invest. We need it. We need it. We need it. Declan Rice. I mean, talk about unprecedented again. Declan Rice is given post-match interviews lamenting the fact that Kieran Tierney is coming on as a left wing. Kieran Tierney is only still at the club. With all due respect to him, I love Tierney, by the way. He's been fantastic servant, and damn, I wish he'd stayed, because he certainly gives us something different as a traditional fullback. But the point I'm making is he is saying that Kieran Tierney is coming on as a left wing. if Kieran Tierney did not do his hamstring at the Euros last season, he wouldn't have been at Arsenal. That's what scuppered any transaction for him to exit the club last summer. All of a sudden, we're bringing him on. We're bringing him on to see out matches from 70, 75 minutes onwards. This is not intentional thinking. This is not part of the plan. So Arsenal were all over the shop. And we were punished to the maximum. I just have to call it like it is. We were punished to the maximum for our inaction. So there's not much else Mikel can really do, right? He's been as vocal as he ever has been, in his tenure at Arsenal. So hard questions need to be asked. I do believe there was some intentional. What's the right word? Like a directive, maybe from the club that we need to sell to buy last summer first. Like if Mikel wants to reinvest further in the team, then players that are just sort of sitting around on the sidelines, like Nketiah and Smith Rowe, like let's cash in and let's invest. And I understand the rationale. That's prudent thinking. That's responsible financial management. And we are a very well run club. That must be said. We are quite a diligent, professionally run club. So that matters. So if we were given a directive, that's fine. But get the business done earlier. Like get those transactions done early. Close deals and have things lined up. So we're not just exiting a number of forward players and then deadline day panic loan signing of Raheem Sterling. Like that should not happen. This is something that was synonymous with Arsenal of years ago. It should not be happening when we're trying to climb that mountain. We are so damn close, 89 points last season. We just need a couple of finishing touches to the team to really, really go like Donkey Kong, right? It's on like Donkey Kong to try and win the major trophies. We botched it. We botched it. So look, I won't keep banging on about that. I'm going to try and look forward now to what awaits us. So there's a lot of rumors already. Zubimendi, as much as people talk like he's done, like it's just a matter of it's a formality. I mean, I'm one of those old school people that until I see him holding the Arsenal shirt pictured next to Mikel or Andrea Berta now, right in that boardroom at Arsenal with the logo in the background and Stuart McFarlane taking the photography and it's on Arsenal.com, until I see it, I'm not going to quite believe it. But it does sound like it's just effectively waiting to be closed, right? So we also saw overnight the announcement from Jorginho, who left the club. Like I'm quite sad about this. He's a fantastic professional. He's basically an on-coach leader. He's an additional coach as well. Like he's got fantastic leadership, big game player. I'm convinced, and you probably heard me bang on about this before, right? I'm convinced if he did not have that punctured lung, that rib injury, if he played that first leg against PSG, I'm convinced that opening 20 minutes doesn't happen. Rice wouldn't be dragged out of position, wouldn't have given Dembele the space to shin the ball home. I'm convinced a big-time player like that, plug and play, break glass in case of emergency, Jorginho comes into that central midfield, releasing Rice to do what he does best and just charge forward. They couldn't deal with him. It's one of my what ifs, one of my great what ifs. If Jorginho was fit and available, my goodness me, how things could have been different. But look, it's a lament because I actually prefer him over Thomas Partey. I know it's sounding like Partey will be extended with Arsenal. I've got strong reservations around that for a host of reasons. I wish it was Jorginho. So Zubimendi coming in, that's essential. And we might even need one more. So I'm looking at the numbers then. So you got like Rice, Zubimendi, potentially Partey, remains to be seen. I know Lewis Skelly is an option, but in defence, we've already got some exits going. We've got, you know, Tierney exiting, Zinchenko, it remains to be seen. We've got injury concerns over a couple of players as well, of course. Tomiyasu won't be back until the end of the year, at least. And, you know, can you really rely upon him as a permanent squad number? I don't quite know. Calafiori's had a very stop-start season, so he's got a big pre-season. Hopefully he can just get his body right and and you know, he can play a lot more minutes next season. So there's, you know, Gabriel coming off a torn hamstring off the bone, right? So there's a lot of work to be done, isn't there? When I say it out loud, we've got a lot of work to do. And I haven't even touched on contract renewals. Saliba, Saka, Gabriel himself. It sounds like our extension's imminent for Trossard, which is great because we should be adding to what we have, not weakening. We need to add. Rodrigo has been linked. It remains to be seen. Is that just classic agent talk or press talk? But you know, there's a definite opportunity for like a world class left winger who comes in on that side. Then all of a sudden you've got him, you've got Saka on the right, you've then got bench strength, impactors off the bench, right? Like imagine how powered up we would be, had the likes of Trossard, Martinelli as rotation options as we play in 2-3 games a week in March, April, May, like crunch time. That'd be brilliant for the club. And of course, then we power up at centre forward, Šeško or Gyökeres. If anyone who watches The Simpsons, I'm always reminded of that scene where Mr. Burns does his own shopping when Smithers goes on a holiday, and he's standing there with a bottle of ketchup and catsup, and they both look the same, and he's like swaying between them, ketchup, catsup, and I find myself, it almost changes every day. It's like Šeško, Gyökeres. it's sorry for that side rant. If you don't watch The Simpsons, then you're probably wondering what the hell is this guy on about. But I find myself sort of, you know, swaying each way, like, you know, trying to figure out who's the best fit. But here's the point. I don't overly mind who it is, as long as it's done. As long as it's done nice and early. Like let's show some intent. When that transfer window opens, let's hit the ground running. Get deals done. Finalize transactions. Integrate them with as part of the preseason training camps and then the preseason tours, so we can start the season with a fully integrated squad as much as possible. Get those players in, get the signings in, send a signal to the market, send a signal to everyone else that we mean some serious shit this season. Pardon me for swearing, but like, get it done. Whoever it is, I don't particularly mind. If you were to ask me who I'm leaning towards, I do believe the ceiling of Šeško is higher. I've just got, just from what I've seen and heard, I reckon Arsenal understandably ruined the fact that we didn't go hard for Isak a couple of years ago, because now he's beyond reach. You got to get them before they peak, before they hit that world-class level. When he's $60, $70 million, okay, or pounds, pardon me, okay, we can get it done. But once they blow out to 120, 130, 140 million pounds, it's done. The opportunity is gone. So Šeško is young. His profile is immense, right? I think he has a more of a natural game style to sort of integrate with the way Arsenal plays. So look, it remains to be seen. Whoever we go for, I would like it to be done. And all of a sudden, if we power up that forward line, we're a serious unit already. For Arsenal to finish second, and we ran PSG ragged in that second leg. Like we were incredible, we were absolutely incredible. Kept out by one of the all-time great goalkeeping performances by Donnarumma. Like my goodness gracious me, we had them on toast. Despite all our injuries, all our setbacks, these guys were on it. It was on like Donkey Kong that opening few minutes. I was so proud of what they saw. They left everything out there. We just couldn't find the back of the net. We couldn't capitalize when we had the dominance, unlike PSG when they had the dominance in the first leg. And that's the difference. The finest margins possible football is. A fingertipper, say from Donnarumma, a shin goal from Dembele. I mean, it just changes the entire complexion. So we are so damn close. And credit to everyone to get us as far as we did. I know this is of little comfort to anyone because, yeah, we've come up short again, and this is largely a season where we've taken a bit of a sideways step in some respects. But look, the hunger's still there. I can feel it from them. No one wants to win more than Arteta. In fact, I want to touch on this point. I think he needs a break. He does. You've seen it wearing on him the last few weeks, and some of the stuff that he said, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm cringing. It's like, Mikel, don't say that. Don't do this thing about, you know, we kind of won a couple of titles with our points tally and whatnot, and we're the best team in the Champions League. Mikel, don't do that, mate. Don't do that. I know what he's trying to say. I genuinely do. And I know he's using that as a rallying call for his players to keep them up and keep them going. I get all of that. I get the rationale, but Mikel, please don't say it. Please don't say it out loud. And, you know, his emotions are running high. This guy is spent. You can see he's got very little left in the tank himself, right, after what he's endured as well this season. And, you know, it's just he needs a break. He needs to get some family time. Spend some time with his kids, right? Like, you know, that they must miss him, and he must need that too. He's got to fill up his own cup. I think he goes to Spain this time every season, gets back home with the friends and family, and all the little things matter. Like, just spending time with the kids. He's probably got more time now in the evenings. Just to even something as simple as, like, you know, lying down with your kids and putting them to bed, right? And just until they fall asleep. It's just so energetic. It fills up your cup. He would have had very little chance to do that sort of stuff, right? Because the schedule is unrelenting, and it would have just been nonstop for so many months. So I'm looking forward to him just stepping out of the limelight, step out of the spotlight, and just take himself out of the spotlight too. Let him rest. Let him recuperate. Let the club, let the executives now, let Berta cook. Let the owners, you know, support Mikel as they said they're going to do. And let's just get you done, right? Let's just get it done. Because we're on the cusp of greatness. I strongly, strongly believe, and I've said this all along, that it's not a matter of if we climb that mountain, it's when. And it's with this team. It's with this manager. They're the ones who have brought us so close. You don't abandon things now. You don't. I used that analogy last time about trying to scale Mount Everest. Like, you're 80, 85% of the way there, right? You crane your neck back. You look up. You can see the summit. You can see it. You're on the precipice of getting there. Sure, there's still work to get done and still hard work ahead of you to keep going, right, in those conditions, of course. However, you don't abandon it now. You don't give up. It's actually further to descend back to base camp than it is to climb that final mountain. The final piece of the mountain. And we are so damn close. These are the guys, this is the team who have brought us to here, to this position. So it's so damn important that we support them, invest in them, back them, because they're the people as well who are going to lift us, hopefully in 12 months' time. We are lifting those trophies and enjoying the types of parades and celebration that the women's team, by the way, congratulations to them, monumental achievement, Champions League winners, right? Like we've got a taste for it now. We want that. We want that for the entire club. And we are so damn close, and you just got to now do what you need to do to get it done. So I'm very confident we will. Now, thank you so much for listening this far. What I'm going to try and do in the next week or so is that I want to do more of an expanded season review and just talk about, I'll probably break it up into sections such as the defensive unit, who we might see come and go, and a bit of a review and reflection, and then break it down into the midfield and forwards as well, right? I'll cover that in a separate recording so as not to convolute this recording. But this is more of a wrap-up season reflection, where we go from here, how important intentional conscious decisions are going to be now from here, and more so as well, just to thank everyone who has listened these last few months, and thank you for all the kind feedback. I read every single word. Thank you so much. Every YouTube comment and stuff, like, it's a blessing. So thank you for all your feedback. Please submit any questions you've got, any comments or suggestions, or you can ask me some listener questions. I will read it out word for word and address it in my next recording. So please do reach out if you would like to. And if you could be ever so kind as to leave a like and subscribe on YouTube before listening, or please consider leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really does help boost the engagement. So I'll wrap this one up to say again, thank you so much for listening this far and for all your kind words and support. I'm looking forward to a break. I'm also looking forward to how Arsenal power up, and let's just go and get it done next season. Bring it on, I say. So until then, look after yourselves, look after your mental health and well-being. Take a break if you need to. Don't get drawn into all the, you know, the shit fights and the banter and stuff. You know, like, we just don't need that crap. Anyway, so thank you again, and I'll wrap this up. I'll see you next time. I'll record again soon. Until then, all the best to you all. Stay safe, stay well, and come on, Arsenal.